Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Jason Goff, and I'm joined by Rob Schaefer and KC Johnson of NBCSportsChicago.com and, of course, our digital content producer, the man, the myth, the legend, Tony Gill. Coming up on the show, we'll discuss Jimmy. That's right, Jimmy Butler going crazy for game three, and also the referendum on Chicago and Jimmy's time here, and LeBron and the Lakers playing it too cool. We also got some Bulls news for us, and we'll look forward to the rest of the offseason.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
Welcome to another Bulls Talk Podcast. I'm Jason Goff, and once again, I'm joined by my fabulous teammates. We've got Rob Schaefer and KC Johnson from NBCSportsChicago.com. And of course, our digital content producer, Tony Gill, is always hanging out with us, making sure this thing gets out to you as soon as it needs to. Fellas, good to see you and hear you. Good to be back with you guys after last week. I have to address something right off the bat, though. So I didn't get a chance to talk to you guys about the first two games of the NBA Finals, and we talked about the preview and how much I was enjoying the fact that Jimmy Butler was going to have a chance to perform on this stage, a former Bull, a guy who some people have it twisted on how I feel about Jimmy Butler's career. Like, it's as if you can't respect Jimmy Butler's career and also understand some of the things that have befallen him and his teammates when it comes to, you know, being Jimmy Butler and dealing with Jimmy Butler. There's a conversation going on right now that I find fascinating about Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat, because every once in a while, national pundit KC and Rob and Tony will put out that, man, how would Minnesota, Philadelphia, and Chicago feel right now after watching that game? They're pretty quiet after the 14, 13, and 6-point games that he's had this playoffs. And that's not me taking a shot at Jimmy Butler. It's just Jimmy Butler is a terrific player. But Jimmy Butler also is not in those positions or with those teams for some very obvious reasons. And Jimmy has forced his way out of a couple of those situations. So, I mean, this whole, man, what would those teams be if Jimmy Butler was still there? Yeah, you could do that. But, you know, you could do that with LeBron for Cleveland and Miami. Like, there was no unceremonious kind of vibes. It was, okay, the time here has ended. You know, you move on to the next team. That time ends. You move on to the next team. He found a spot. And he found a spot where they have a culture that speaks the language that Jimmy Butler speaks. Now, as far as game three is concerned, fellas, that was the best performance that I've ever seen Jimmy Butler put on. We've seen a whole bunch of them. We've seen a lot of them. But the fact that that man got a 40-point triple-double with no three-pointers, it means something to me. Because he was on the ground quite often. That Rajon Rondo love tap, that foul was that was fun, because Jimmy got up and saw his former teammates like, "Hey man, like, you gonna handle me like that? We're supposed to be the three alphas out here." But I enjoyed it. I thought he was the best player on the court on was it Sunday night? And I don't expect the Heat to win another ball game, but you know, with the injuries to Dragic and to Bam, but it's just, I don't think it's going to end. Maybe it won't ever end with Jimmy Butler's career. After he goes somewhere after Miami, I'm sure there's going to be wonder what Miami would be without Jimmy Butler. Like, it's weird to me how a guy who isn't, I won't put Jimmy Butler as a superstar, because I think there's like four or five of those guys at any point in time during the NBA season or generation. But I think he's a star player. He's an all-star. He competes at a level that many don't, and I think that's his talent, truly, right? Because he's not a knockdown shooter, right? He's not a mesmerizing ball handler. He's a terrific defender, and hell, he's not that great of a playmaker. I mean, well, he's a good playmaker, but he's not a great playmaker. So there's no one attribute to his game that I think stands overall outside of his competitive nature. And that's the fact that he takes his cool off. I watched the Lakers team, Rob and Tony and KC, run up and down for four quarters, thinking that at some point, them being cooler than the Heat would make them hit more shots or turn the ball over less or actually, you know, rotate on defense more than once. And I, as big a LeBron James fan as I am, that is as bad a performance as I can remember him having. And even with some of the stuff that he did with the drives and you know, using his physical, you know, nature and force to get to the hole, he was floating out there, and the dude took it to him. And I love seeing it. They guarded – well, Jimmy guarded him as much as he could. LeBron switched off on a whole bunch – and I don't know what their philosophy is, but he switched off on a whole bunch of things, and he allowed Markieff Morris to get killed in that situation. And when Jimmy Butler runs back saying he's in trouble – He was talking to LeBron James. Like, everybody's putting this out there like, oh, he was saying they're in trouble. He was talking to LeBron James. The first he's in trouble, he said you in trouble. Because I went back and watched this like the Zapruder film 90 times. He said you in trouble to LeBron James and then turned to his teammates and started saying he's in trouble. So game three was thrilling. And I'm all about the Jimmy Butler vibes. But I feel like every time Jimmy has a great game or shows people how really good he is, it's a referendum on the teams that he isn't on anymore.
Yeah, that's a big part of the Jimmy Butler experience these days, Jason. There's no doubt. I will say, and I think we're all in agreement on this. I mean, I tweeted during the game. I mean, that I said that this is a finals performance for the ages. I mean, that was historic stuff.
Yeah.
You know, obviously your mind wanders to his most dominant games, the Bull. Because that's the frame of reference we have here. There was that, you know, 40-point second half in Toronto with the game-winning shot. He had a couple 50-point games here. So obviously, but not on that stage. And to stare down LeBron and to play at that level at a time when the Heat were that shorthanded and so desperately needed a victory. To me, it's the best game of his career, no doubt. You know, Jimmy is a polarizing guy. I like where you're going with this. I wrote a column last week on NBCSportsChicago.com kind of saying the same thing. I maintain, and I said this before, I could be wrong, what is happening now would not have happened here from both sides. I just don't think, you know, by the time – and you were there, Jason. You were in the locker room with me. You know, by the time the Bulls traded him here, the relationship had run its course from both ends. And you can – you can have revisionist history and say the Bulls pulled the plug too early, and that's fine. I'm not saying that view is wrong. I just, as someone that was there every day, if it was a relationship that felt like it had run its course. You know, other teams are doing the same thing. I think what's lost in the argument a little bit is that why people are so upset from a Bulls perspective is that the Bulls were the only one of the three teams that Jimmy is no longer a member of that proactively got rid of him. I mean, he forced his way out of Minnesota. He chose to leave Philadelphia. So in that realm, it adds a little spice to the debate from a Bulls perspective.
Rob, game three, virtuoso performance against an all-time great, carrying that team without Bam and without Dragic, and we'll see what they can do going forward. But you know, Jimmy Butler's legacy, whatever it is, it's cemented. Like, there are very few people who you are very we're aware of Jimmy Butler in a way that I don't think we're aware of other players on his level. And that's not just us being Chicagoans or covering the Chicago scene. You know, like, there are players who are on that second, maybe third tier of stardom that we aren't aware as we are of Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, we were breaking it down, actually, my roommates and I, the other night, kind of the discussion of what tier of star or superstar. I don't know. Those terms are so hard to define. Right. He's in. And yeah, you're right. He does have this level of notoriety. Maybe it's because he's been around for a long time. Maybe it's the style of play because it is so imposing. And he's kind of this perfect combination of, I saw someone tweet and I can't remember to credit them, but just that he's the perfect combination of kind of advanced stats people love him, box score people love him, eye test people love him. He's just this perfect kind of all-encompassingly likable player, just the style that he plays. I thought it was interesting, Jason, that you said he didn't quite have like the like elite skill, because I think watching some of the passing work he was doing in game three, I mean, surgical is the only word I could think of.
No, he had himself a terrific passing game. I think he's a really good passer, but like when I say by elite, like I don't think we're going to put him in the top five passers or the top five scorers. He might be a top five defender, but like his talent is in his stamina and his compete level. Like things that he's willing to do that other dudes aren't willing to do. I mean, getting a 40-point triple-double in the finals with no three-pointers, you're taking an ass-whooping. And he took it the entire game, which I appreciate.
Yeah, and just – and his entire – just his shot creation ability just generally, because then you factor in the foul drawing, and then you combine that with the passing and other elements of it. But, yeah, I mean, it was great. It was an all-time performance, obviously, like we've said, lined up against LeBron. I agreed with you that I think for a game that LeBron started the first quarter with the energy of – telling Jimmy that, hey, you're in trouble, for him to come out with that energy, to put them diametrically opposite each other. And then in the fourth quarter, like, yeah, they were switching off, and those were soft switches too. Like it was a little, and I said this, we were talking before we tape, I don't like questioning the effort or the focus of NBA athletes from the seat that I'm in, unless it's really glaring. So I don't know what necessarily, if it was a game plan thing or if it was a focus thing or what it was. But it just was interesting that you're right. It did feel like LeBron was floating a little bit, especially down the stretch, even in a game where he finishes with 25, 10, and 8. Right. It's just like kind of – it's just LeBron James. But, yeah, my only other takeaway from game three, I actually thought – and I felt this way a little bit throughout the finals, and I thought it might have just been a competitive level thing. But this was a competitive game that the underdog won. I think this is really the first time throughout this bubble experience that I've been very conscious that we are like – play or that this is being played in a bubble without fans, the atmosphere of just thinking about what that would have been like in Miami, that performance, especially some of the buckets that he got late, especially with the LeBron undercurrent to everything, just knowing how raucous that arena can get. I just think this was a performance that deserved fans, especially if they don't get another game in the finals, which, you know, we all picked Lakers in six on this podcast before the series. I think that prediction looks reasonable at this point, three games in. The finals is the first time where the atmosphere drop has really, to me, been noticeable. So there was a little bit of hollowness afterwards from my seat of just being like, damn, like this really could have been something like goosebump inducing, like really kind of awe-inspiring to another level if it was being played in an arena with, you know, packed with fans. But then again, and maybe, you know, this matchup isn't the same if everything's being played in a normal world, like you can, what if everything's death, but you know, this really is the first time these last three games that I have noticed that they are playing in a bubble. Whereas before I was kind of grateful for the environment because it was producing such high quality basketball. I've been a little bit more conscious of that lately.
Yeah. And if this thing does go seven, you know, I think the Lakers are going to win. I think the Lakers are going to win in five now. Like you said, we agree that the Lakers, by our estimation, we're going to win in six. It's fun to watch because they didn't look like they could compete with this team in the first game. And then some shots went down. The Lakers didn't turn over the basketball in game two. It was a little bit different. And they were ahead 47 points. I'm sorry, 47 of the 48 minutes by 10 points or more, something like crazy like that in game two, if I'm not mistaken. That this Heat team, it was kind of like the Boston series where, you know, Boston had the ability to blow the Heat out. The Heat don't have the ability to blow Boston out, but the Heat win the series because they're going to do all those extra things. I don't know if we're going to sit back and say, okay, they did the extra things two or three more times to win the series or take this thing to seven. And Anthony Davis came up in our text chain as well. And Tony mentioned that I'd have my chance to unearth all those Anthony Davis questions that I had going in. And once again, I want to say, I'm not the guy that's like, I don't believe in Anthony Davis in the fourth quarters of big games. It's just, I hadn't seen it yet. We hadn't seen, you know, those moments change people. Those moments change. I mean, that's why they make legacies, right? Because the guys who step up to them, you know, the Robert Horry's of the world, right? The, you know, the Michael Jordans of the world. Like, no matter what your role is, whether it's leading the team or hitting a shot or two in that role, in on that stage where the spotlight is the brightest, are you going to come through? Just watching what Anthony Davis had to struggle with foul trouble wise, but also like his package is made of tough shots. Like this dude, he takes a lot of, you know, 18 foot corner jump shots fading away. He takes a lot of, you know, 18 foot elbow jump shots with a hand in his face and knocks it down. So I've wondered, as well as I've heard other people wonder, when this time comes and you're playing against a team that scouts you well, or you, like this instance, you're in foul trouble, you got no rhythm. When he got subbed in that fourth quarter and hit his first shot, I was like, oh, okay, here we go. But the deference and the cool, I'm sorry, the Lakers were just too fucking cool for too long. And they thought at some point that the Heat were going to turn back into a pumpkin. You know, Jimmy Butler was going to stop hitting shots. Like Tyler Hero, since he went crazy, has not played well, right? Duncan Robinson is getting shots off, but there's an onus on him getting shots off because in game one, I believe he had three shots. If Duncan Robinson not shooting 10 times for you, you know, no matter if he's missing all 10, he's a liability out there. He needs to spread the floor. Like all these things, Bam Adebayo, Goran Dragic, and I think the Lakers just sat back and thought, since the purple and gold was out there and this dude who's won championships, at some point this Heat team is going to fold. So I appreciate it. I appreciate when teams don't take their cool off and get their ass whooped. Like, I appreciate when people show teams that you're going to have to play ball in here. Like, all those Memphis Grizzlies, LA Clippers series that we watched for year in and year out, and they went to the grind. Like, the Clippers made the grindhouse what it was. Because if the Trailblazers come in there, or give me another Western Conference team that was decent at the time, like if any other team comes in there that isn't the shiny Lob City Clippers and gets mashed in the dust like they did with them, then the grindhouse has a different feel. But Blake Griffin and Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan went in there and got worked every time, seemingly. That's what I think, like some of these teams – I appreciate like the poetic nature of basketball when it's like, all right, cool. You got more talent than us, but we're about to fight you. And if you're in for a fight, you're going to beat us. But if you're not in for a fight, it's going to look bad on you. They had 16 turnovers in the first half. LeBron James had 4 turnovers in the fourth quarter. I mean, he missed 3 threes that were 2 uncontested and 1 in his bag. Like, you can't pull up from the logo, point at it, and have everybody partying and then miss those shots down the stretch. So as a LeBron fan and as a fan of the game, I was waiting for it to happen. Because in those moments, too, that's where we can write it. That's where the stories can be written. Like, yo, this team was dragging their ass for 3 quarters, and this dude saved them and is on the brink of sweeping a team for his 4th NBA championship. Instead, you got enough people saying enough, and you just hope it doesn't filter in the dudes that aren't ready for these moments, right? Because Kyle Kuzma's sitting back watching like, are we in trouble? You know, like some of these guys are in those hotel rooms and those bubbles, and they, you know, you can't go hang out with your buddies. You can't live in your big crib. Like I'm looking forward to seeing KC how this atmosphere, like Rob just mentioned, where there's the atmosphere that was sucked out of it with no fans and no, you know, American Airlines Arena and all the whiteout and all the stuff that, you know, the Miami Heat fans would have had going. I'm looking forward to seeing how being up 2-1 can be deemed like an unsatisfactory position if you do think you're in trouble, if you're one of these guys who hasn't been through these wars. This team did a lot of losing before LeBron and Rajon Rondo and some of Dwight Howard jumped on here. So I'm looking forward to seeing some of these guys who haven't been in this moment and how that atmosphere affects them when they can't retreat to the things that make them feel normal, because we still forgetting, well, not forgetting, but these dudes have been cooped up for 2.5 months. And just because your family is coming to see you in a different atmosphere doesn't mean that the atmosphere is that much different outside of your family being there. So I think the next step, KC, is who's going to be the guys that run with LeBron and AD in game 4? Who's that third guy? Is it KCP? Is it Rondo? Rondo had a tough second half to me. Like I'm so jacked for game 4 because the Jimmy Butler thing, he's not going to stop coming after you.
Right. He's not going away. Exactly.
Yeah, he's not. And he smells blood.
Yeah. And KCP had that you know, really nice first game, but then has kind of fallen off since then. Obviously, AD had the foul trouble last night, and I agree with you about Rondo. It's funny, when Jason, when you brought up the Lakers being too cool, how did I know you're eventually going to get to some Clippers hatred per
hey, man, soon as you could have won something, man. I'd like
as soon as you said the Lakers were being too cool, I was like, this is somehow going to devolve into the Clippers, man. Yeah, I just knew it was
Lob City shade. It wasn't this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I got you. But we already covered the current iteration. So. And I also got to ask you guys one thing for discussion, because Jason, you mentioned you're a LeBron fan and also a fan of the game. I too am a LeBron fan. Anybody have an issue with him walking off the court and having to have a guy sub in for him to finish the game?
I didn't see it until like an hour and a half ago on my social media. I didn't know it happened. So like, this has happened twice before, I think, in his career. I think it was Orlando. I think it was an Orlando Cleveland series where he walked off the court, I believe. But I don't know that I have a problem with it. Is it the best look? No. But in terms of like playing my flag on like Bush League or not Bush League, and it's not just because it's LeBron, I'm not terribly upset about it. Now,
probably not big enough for that. I agree with you. But if
somebody was like, yo, that's not how you should comport yourself, cool. Like, if that's your vibe, that's your vibe. I just, for me, it didn't touch me that way when I saw it, on Instagram and on Twitter, because I didn't see it live last night. I didn't see him walk off like that.
Yeah, but you make a good point overall, Jason, about how, you know, not only is Jimmy not going anywhere, the Heat aren't going anywhere. They're well coached. They make adjustments. They're tough minded, no matter who's out there. So, you know, the possessed LeBron that to me defined games one and two, you know, wasn't consistently there in game three. Let's call it like we saw it. I mean, you know, 8 turnovers, you know, throwing out the smack to Jimmy early and then having to come clap back at him. I'll be interested to see, you know, LeBron's response, number one. And then, like you said, if they get that third contribution that they need past him and AD.
Yeah. Rob, you got an issue with the walking off of the court?
Nah, nothing like that really personally offends me. There's just too many other things to worry about for me to personally concern myself with it. The one thing that I'll say, and it's not an original point, a lot of people have made this, including Rajon Rondo on a report that just resurfaced from last season. If you're LeBron and you have to know, and I think it's pretty evident that this is true, that your body language trickles down to the rest of that team, especially when you're talking about, you could include young guys like Kuzma in this. You could even include vets that just haven't been on a final stage before, because how many people have, the KCPs, JaVale McGee has, I'm trying to run down who the other ones, I guess the Carusos, like anybody on that team who hasn't been on the stage before, you have to know that you are setting the tone for, even in the game, the level of competitiveness, the level of, kind of grit that you're going to play with. So I think that as a symptom of kind of the floating nature of him down the stretch that we were talking about. None of us are obviously in that locker room, so we don't know what the discussions were like after the game. But if all of those things add up to affect team-wide morale or team-wide focus or team-wide motivation or anything like that, then I probably have a problem with it. But that's something for them to settle as a team. At the end of the day, there's enough veterans there, and I would trust Rondo, even if he didn't play well, to set some stuff straight there. They obviously have pretty good chemistry. That's pretty well documented. So, but personally, I didn't really have a problem with it. I guess if it's going to trickle down, and it seemed to trickle down during the game itself, then it's an issue. What it's really going to be about to me is how they come out and respond in game four, because Miami had a counterpunch in game three. They went to man. They went away from that zone. They had a game plan for Anthony Davis. He got in foul trouble, but they were also doing some things to my eye, you know, forcing him left. They were making him uncomfortable. Throwing Iguodala on him, I think, is faring pretty much as well as anybody has if you're not going to have Bam on him. So there are little things that, you know, these series, and it's been only amplified by kind of how closely we've been watching this and how much everything has kind of been sanitized with the bubble. But it's just, you know, these series are always about adjustments. So I'll be interested to see how they come out and kind of punch back. I think they've earned the benefit of the doubt at this point. People were kind of splicing together all the moments similar to the Jimmy Butler saying, hey, they're in trouble. The Lillard dance, What were the other ones? The Westbrook yelling at the toddlers on the sideline. And then there was the Jamal Murray shimmy too. So the Lakers have earned the benefit of the doubt. Again, like we've been saying, I'll believe that this is really a series altering and that it'll change the result of the series. I'll believe that it's that type of game when I see it. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think we can make a final determination on whether that was a symptom of something deeper if they come out flat and sloppy in game four too. But I wouldn't predict necessarily that that's going
to
happen.
And I'd like to, before we move on to our Bulls stuff, I'd like to congratulate both Mike Breen and Myers Leonard for getting Myers a job as a head coach whenever he wants to retire. Because, yo, they got a hold of Myers Leonard talking, and it didn't cease the entire night. Like, he's riding the bike over there, and Mike Breen's like, look at him. Even when he's not doing anything, he's doing something. And I'm like, dude, cut it out. Like, knock it off, man. Like what are we doing here? Like, I guess he the next coach of the Nets after Steve Nash goes away? Like,
he's a gym rat, man. He's a gym rat.
all of the white guy adjectives started just vomiting out of his. Oh well, you know, he's such a great team player, and I'm like, dude, he's doing everything that the other cats are out there. Like, it's Miami. Like, if you don't talk and defend, your ass ain't gonna be out there. I love Myers Leonard though. Like, he's one of those dudes. Maybe it's because of Illinois. Like, he's one of those dudes who I've always thought it's like, man, somebody just unleashed Myers Leonard. There's an NBA, you know, really, really good player in there. But no, it was a fun game.
Funniest thing I ever heard.
Dog, it was amazing, wasn't it, Tony? Like, I'm sitting there like, shit, I might vote for Myers Leonard. Like, like I'm sitting there watching it, and it was as if Myers just knew the camera. Like, he knows he's mic'd up, obviously. But it was as if he knew the camera was on him at all. He was telling dudes good minutes when they were coming out. I'm like, man, the Bulls. Who is the Bulls Myers Leonard, Casey?
Arch. Come on, man.
Yeah. Him or Shaq.
All right, I go Arch.
Yeah, I think it's Arch.
I probably go Arch, too.
Yeah, see, I go Arch.
Yeah. Like, I feel like Arch – I feel like his game says that, but does Arch talk that much?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's affable. Yeah.
Come on, that the Robin Lopez mimic scoring. Come on, that's a great teammate.
You're right. My bad.
I know people that have covered my.
It was amazing to watch, dude. It was amazing.
Yeah. They say he's just as genuine as it can get. Like, he's just like, hey, so yeah. I mean, they say he's like legit.
No, listen, you can't keep that up for 2.5 hours and not be that dude. And Mike Breen was my, if Myers Leonard wants an assistant coaching job, his time is up. I think Mike Breen sealed the deal for him last night.
Can I? I was hung up on something that Jimmy said today in his Zoom because you know Jimmy still has that that habit of saying just some borderline corny stuff, but he believes it, so you got to love him. He said that was not the best game of his life. His best game was when he was a 17-year-old playing in an adult league against some grown men. That, of course, is like, you know, impossible to prove and undocumented. Yeah. You know, we don't even know what he's talking about or where it took place. You know, so
yeah, and that's the problem. Jimmy just won't let people write the legacy for him.
Like, exactly.
Certain parts of the legacy you don't have to push back against. You can just be like, yeah, my teammate. You know, you could do the ritual. My teammates found me and all that other. Yeah, I don't want to hear about you at the Y beating up bums, you know, when you were 17 years old. So the Bulls.
Wait, real quick, Jason. Can I add a conspiracy theory I saw on Twitter about yesterday's game?
You can because you have the voice of God.
Right? I like fighting allergies, Tony, right here. It's like different vibe.
So I saw on Twitter that someone suggesting that LeBron wanted to lose this game. And here's the reason why. Because LeBron, as we all know, is very aware of legacy and what he wants his legacy and trying to dictate what his legacy is.
Can't be a bum slayer.
You can't be a bum slayer in these situations. You can't make it look too easy. Otherwise, people won't respect the ring that you're about to get. So cause a little controversy, lead the court a little early, you know, have a little bit more turnovers than you're used to, you know.
But doing. You're saying, just step out
But also just play good enough that people can't blame you for the loss.
All right, so LeBron threw the game is what we're saying.
I was going to say, man, just call right, like,
that's the only conclusion. Like, you can wrap it up in that nice little package all you want. You're saying LeBron James threw the game.
Essentially, yeah, that's what the theory is. Essentially, LeBron James and maybe convince AD, like, hey, we can't make it look a little too easy out here, you know.
So he
that's exactly what I was going
to
say.
Rob, he convinced AD to foul a bunch. Yeah,
well, get him in foul trouble and only take 9 shots. Now this helps the Finals MVP case when they do win.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe he'll throw another one.
AD didn't take a shot in the fourth quarter. Come on, guys.
How can he be Finals MVP, man?
Because LeBron told him not to, right?
Yeah. He's the overlord.
So this is a man who has lost 6 NBA finals. And that is the knock. Like, the man is going to end up top 5 in scoring, rebounds, and assists probably. or top 10, I should say. But the knock is you don't win the finals often enough. He is going to chance that by giving a team a game just so he can come through like the knight in shining armor. I'm not going.
I'm not feeling that.
Yeah, I'm not going. There's been some questionable moments in NBA history. You're like,
guys, LeBron is smarter than we give him credit for.
Oh, so Tony now is copping to the fact that he is the Twitter feed that is doing this. Tony messed around and like dipped his toe in the conspiracy water. Like, I'm seeing on the internet from my own phone I'm not going, man. I can't do it. I mean, you know, maybe Embiid, but never LeBron.
Come on, man. That's a low blow.
You know, that midnight delivery or that quart of ice cream is usually an indicator that you're not going to be able to play the way you need to play, whether it be because of the food or not. Fellas, where are we at in the Bulls timeline? Rob, KC, I mean, we've got workouts. We've got people at the Advocate. KC, you start. Rob, you go from there.
We are moving into a dark period where they're going to be shifting back to individual workouts and one-on-one with one coach at one basket kind of thing. The group workouts are concluding. Officially, as of tomorrow, there's some early word that it's kind of breaking up slowly as it is over the weekend. I think some players have already kind of started to skedaddle. It was voluntary. I think they got to accomplish what they wanted to accomplish. It really, at the end of the day, I mean, and Mark Eversley gave this voice last week. It really was more about just the camaraderie and the playing 5-on-5. With no head coach, you're not installing systems. It's not really a training camp. It's more just these guys haven't played much 5-on-5 because of the pandemic, and you know, obviously the chance to do some team building with new management. So it was more about that than about X's and O's, and you know. Are they going to extend the qualifying offer to Chris Dunn or all that stuff? I mean, as we talked about last week, they're undefeated in September still. You know, they had good vibes come in September last year under Jim Boylan, and good vibes right now. And we'll just wait to see when we get some intel on the start date. But it's going to be a while, and that's going to be the other disadvantage. Is now they're kind of go to their own markets and not probably have as much opportunity for 5-on-5 unless they can find a run. So really, really crazy time in the NBA for sure.
Rob, what have you taken from this time over the last week or so, and what's to come?
Yeah. I mean, what's to come seems like we're back in the wilderness again, waiting for the draft, which is now kind of coming up a little bit, as currently scheduled, a month and a half away. Free agency will be right after that. So that'll be interesting from, you know, roster analyzation or roster analyzing standpoint. And KC, like you said, in terms of not getting anything X's and O's or anything really concrete or enduring out of this, the head coach wasn't even there. Billy Donovan wasn't even there. So yeah, it does seem like it was kind of a 2-week summer camp. The company line is that it was a success. Bulls Digital, and this isn't even a snide remark because they've actually done a great job pumping out kind of behind the scenes content, kind of giving a window into what they're doing. They got some stuff on tape and got that out there. We saw some Lowry in between the legs dunks. I think February 2019 Lowry and or sorry, February 2019 Lowry involuntary group workout. Lowry are competing for Bulls fans' hearts right now. So that's kind of funny. But yeah, I mean, other than that, it seemed like a good bonding session for a team that, you know, needed to reconnect. Like you said, just hadn't played basketball in 6 or so months. We got to talk to Mark Eversley for the first time since he was introduced. Well, you know, we talked about that on the last pod, but always good to get people on record and be able to get the take on kind of how things are going so far. But yeah, in terms of what's next, yeah, the individual workouts for people staying in town. And other than that, we're back to, you know, what's this, month 7 of the off season now, technically.
Yeah,
so
right?
We're just kind of back to the spinning our wheels.
Yeah. Before we depart, happy birthday this last weekend or so. Was it last weekend for Derrick Rose? I think it was Friday or Saturday.
Sunday, yeah.
Sunday, yesterday, yeah. 32.
Man, say that again, KC.
32.
32 years old, Derrick Rose. You talk about, like, that's the thing, too. As a Bulls fan, after Michael Jordan, there was this new, okay, what are we going to get as this generation of Bulls fans? Like, I was born in 1980, so I really wasn't aware of Michael Jordan until about 86, right? Until you start realizing, like, oh, this is sports. I'm a child. This is what my dad watches. The Bulls, the Bears Super Bowl shuffle was still, you know, I still had all the outfit. I had the 45 record from KFC that I spun on my play school, you know, my first record player. Like, it was all about Bears. And then the Bulls thing happened and the Jordan thing happened. But after Jordan and after the baby Bulls, like, there was that time where you're trying to figure out, okay, what is this team going to be with Noach and Ben Gordon and Luol Deng and you know, the Jalen Rose trade before that, the Jay Williams unfortunate motorcycle accident, and Derrick Rose, you know, for everything, the most polarizing, I think, Bull of all time. For Derrick Rose and that time, and to remember what it was, and for it to happen in such a short space, such a short instance, like a snapshot of an NBA fan's life or a Chicago Bulls fan's life, to look back and say this dude has now been in the league for 10 years is crazy. Because, you know, right there on that baseline, as I'm walking back with Agre Sam, walking back to the media room, and you see, like, 25 feet away from you, this dude collapse, and you know what it looked like and what it felt like in the moment. Like, for all these things to have happened, KC, and you've covered a lot of these things, but, you know, the fact that this dude is not only rebounded professionally, seemingly, but personally from what he was going through and everything that was happening with the case and the injuries, and, you know, to see that dude in a different space right now at 32 years old, right? Nobody knew how that story was going to end after that injury, and it hasn't ended yet, but seemed like he's back on the upswing again.
Yeah, obviously, good to see him in a good place in his seemingly in his life, and obviously, no doubt in his career, playing at the level he's playing at. I always just go back to, you know, his first training camp, and obviously, as a number one pick, he came in with so much hype and so much pressure. And obviously, you know, so well known here in the local scene because of what he did at Simeon. Mm-hmm. I just my mind typically goes back to that experience and just covering him in that rookie year and, you know, on the way to winning rookie of the year, and just how shy he was and how much, but yet how respectfully he comported himself, you know, with the media and stuff. I remember those early years pretty fondly. Obviously, that he hadn't blown up on a national level yet, so we kind of had him more on a local scene as far as reporting and beat perspective. So, yeah, it's always fun to catch up with Derrick. You know, whenever our paths cross on the NBA trail.
Yep, going up and hollering at him at the Birdo every once in a while. You know, I'll never forget coming away from one of media hordes where everybody's in his face, and, you know, like you mentioned, Derrick is super shy, super you know, introverted at that time, and him walking away from it and him knowing that I went to Evanston, and I had mentioned something to him, and I was like, oh, Jabari's getting ready to play Evanston. And he snapped out of it in that moment. He's like, we're about to beat y'all ass. And then he walked out. Like, he had sat there for 30 minutes and said maybe 25, 30 words, and none of them with that amount of emphasis. And then immediately to snap into trash talking Simeon alumni, you know what I mean? Like, shouting out Jabari. It was in a moment where we just passed each other. And I'm like, yeah, man, all right, you probably will. But, you know, it was one of those cool things. And then a lot of those times where you didn't see Derek interact with the media the way he interacted with media that didn't have microphones on him at all times. So, happy birthday to him. He is a proud papa, so I'm sure he's running around doing all the things that we as dads are doing, KC. Rob, anything coming up that you want to tell the people to keep an eye out on over this next week or so as we get ready to wrap up the pod?
We'll be diving into draft mode. So the day that this is up, I'll have a piece on LaMelo Ball and kind of how he might fit with the Bulls. We'll be, you know, I'm not planting my flag or anything. We'll be doing that for a lot of the different top draft prospects. Although LaMelo Ball is my of everyone in the class, my flag, prospect
Rob.
Of choice.
I was about to say, hey Rob, that's what your flag is there for, to be planted. Damn it!
I will say I'm already writing this thing, and I'm like, I'm gonna write this for a lot of the other prospects, but I'm worried this one might have like a lot more heart in it than a lot of the other ones, and you'll be kind of able to read.
You're about to write a love letter to LaMelo Ball, ain't you?
Yeah. I'm a fan. The more you watch, and I have been able to find a decent amount of his footage from last season in Australia. The more you watch, I mean, he's just such an intriguing, fun player that I think, you know, there's pros and cons to everyone, especially in this class. But he certainly would be an intriguing fit with the Bulls. So day you're listening to this, I'll have something up on him on NBCSportsChicago.com, and we'll be diving down all the draft rabbit holes we can brainstorm over the next couple of weeks. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, there's a brilliant like lack of refinement to his game, where you're like, if those things get touched up, the skills are there. He's got something for you. KC, anything else we should be looking out for until we talk the next time on this pod?
We're gonna open up the Bulls mailbag this week at NBCSportsChicago.com. Yeah. So be looking for that. Fire away with any questions you might have that I can answer. Looking forward to posting that. On Wednesday or Thursday of this week.
Somebody send him a Jim Boylan question, please.
Out of habit. I'm ready, man. Let's do it.
KC loves the Jim Boylan questions. He loves the when are they going to sign Derek questions. what else?
You'll be getting some Jimmy Butler ones this week.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
sure.
I'm ready.
Yeah, they're gonna dig up all of KC's old columns from his former employer and be like, see, you didn't like Jimmy Butler. How wrong are you now? Like, yeah. Yeah, this because my social media, I'd like to thank Jimmy Butler for people who I haven't heard from for half a decade now, just popping back up and asking me how I feel about Jimmy Butler. I'm like, I've always liked him as a player. It's just, you know, he was growing. He was maturing on the way to where he is now, as we all are. So for Rob and KC, my man Tony Gill, I'm Jason Goff. Thank you so much for listening to another edition of the Bulls Talk Podcast. We'll talk to you soon. Make sure you go out there and get yourself registered to vote. I believe today is the last day to register to vote, so you should be registered already. So now you just got to get out there and vote and get yourself a caravan of people. Go pick up some old folks, go pick up some young folks, stay socially distant, you know, protect yourself, mask up. But that's going to be the creed from here on out. You got to vote. So thank you once again for listening to the Bulls Talk Pod. For KC, for Rob, and for Tony Gill, I'm Jason Goff. We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker by just saying, play Bulls Talk Podcast. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us because you know you love us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning. But until then, be safe and take care of each other.